So thanks for attending, everyone. We'll start this week's W3C CCG meeting. Today, we are pleased to invite Jack and Rebel from the Tonomi Foundation to lead and present on the topic of multi-signature verifiable credentials and conditional proofs. But before we get to the main agenda, I just want to remind everyone a couple quick admin stuff. So the first thing is the Code of Ethics and Professional Conduct. Just want to make sure that we hold a respectful conversation and that we be respectful to each other. Quick IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with a full IPR agreement signed. Make sure you have a W3C account, and if you encounter any issues, feel free to contact me or any of the co-chairs. I will send you the link, and the links are also included in the email agendas that I send every week. Quick call notes. These meetings are being recorded, and the meeting minutes are and audio recordings can be found in our GitHub link. And we usually get out these transcriptions within the same week. And if you have any questions on that, just let me know. We use GT chat to queue speakers. So if you have any questions, just type in Q+ to add yourself to the queue, or Q- to remove that. And you can do a Q? To see who is in the queue. All right, let's get to the introductions and reintroductions. If you're new to the community or you haven't been active and want to reintroduce yourself, please feel free to unmute. Okay, I'll leave about 2-3 minutes for at the end of the meeting for introductions, reintroductions as well. All right, any announcements or reminders? Hi, Manu, please.
Thanks, Harrison. I'm going to share a couple of things. So the first note is that the verifiable credentials working group face-to-face meeting in Miami is now at capacity. So we can't take any more folks in person. We're at the limit to what the room can hold. But you can still attend remotely if you'd like. You just need to talk with the chairs to do that. The agenda has been published, and this is the agenda, which is public. We're going to be talking about holder binding, media types, content types, and how they relate to VC, JWS, COSY, those kinds of things. We're going to be talking about extension points, like evidence status list, rendering terms of use. We're going to be talking about terminology. That's day one. Day two will be verifiable credential data integrity and the crypto suites around that, as well as VC JOT, and then some issue processing. And then day three will be a discussion around whether or not at context is going to be optional or not. Some industry news, which will more than likely be off the record so that people can share more about around what's happening so that we can all hopefully coordinate things that are going on. And then issue processing, and then closing out with deliverables, the things that we believe we are going to be able to accomplish. So that's the agenda. It's on the public mailing list. I can put the agenda here in the chat channel, BCWG, F2F agenda. So that's that. And then, second announcement, is, and give me a second. I've got to find a window that's going to be difficult to find. Apologies. I've lost it. This has to do with the announcements around like all the things that are going on in the working group. So basically every week we get a list of things that the working group has been working on. And as you might have seen, that list is getting longer and longer and longer. So there is a lot that's going on in the verifiable credentials working group right now. We get a summary of meaning this group gets a summary of what goes on there from week to week. It's called the weekly, you know, digest. Here we go. I found a kind of crappy version of it. But as you can see here, there, like, these are all the concurrent conversations, the parallel conversations that are happening right now in the verifiable credentials working group. So these are all, like, this is just last week. Like, these are just the items we talked about last week. So 20 issues, 52 comments in just, you know, the VC data model repository, with many more repositories having comments. So it's getting highly likely that you're going to miss something if you're trying to keep up. So I'm just letting, you know, everyone know that, keep your eyes peeled every Monday at around 12 PM. This summary is sent out. And, we are processing a lot of issues in parallel and coming to resolution and doing PRs and closing those issues. So just be, you know, pay attention to that going on. That's it.
Thanks, Fanny. Yeah. I look at that, the VC working group agenda. It's amazing. It's like 3 days of good conversation. So. I'm actually going to, invite Oliver. There's a good thread around the holder binding, the topic of holder binding. So we'll have Oliver and the authors of that paper, to actually, lead a discussion around the topic of holder binding in April. And then I think there's probably other good topics in those agenda that, we might want to invite them to kind of lead those discussions and, actually educate some of the folks here, including myself, on those issues. Cool. Any other agenda? Any other announcements or reminders? So in the email I sent out, there is a link to the W3C calendar. So we have the agenda actually scheduled, the topic schedule until the mid-April. So if you have any other topics that people want us to kind of put into the schedule, please feel free to email any of the co-chairs. All right, any questions on the work items or any comments or things that people want to bring up in regards to the work items? All right, let's get to the main agenda. So today we are very pleased to have Jack and Rebel from Tonomi Foundation to present and lead a discussion on multi-signature verifiable credentials and conditional proofs. I think there was a very interesting thread a couple months ago in regards to this topic, and there are also other email threads in regards to multi-signature verifiable credentials and these kind of topics. So I think it's good to actually have a meeting and a live discussion on this topic. So I'll kind of hand the floors to Jack and Rebel and let them kind of lead these discussions. Thank you, Jack.
Cool. Thanks, Harrison. Can you see my screen here.
Yes.
Great. So thanks very much for having us. Basically, we're going to be talking about some of our work in the DJWT library and what its implications are. So my name is Jack Tanner, and we also have Rebel from the Autonomy Foundation, we're the primary authors of this work.
Hello.
Rebel's going to be helping with this presentation as well. So we did create the slides to guide us through visually a bit. I'm going to explain what we've done, why it's important. I'm going to have a little refresher on the conditional proofs W3C spec. I've got a link here in this presentation for our decision to use this particular library, DJWT, but I'm not really going to go into it. You can use that. I'll share the link to these slides once we're finished. Rebel's going to take us through the changes we made, which were prior to the DJWT library. And then I'm going to talk about the characteristics of this and what's next as we see it. So the main thing is that we have forked the JWT, JWT VC, and DID Resolver libraries, and we've implemented the conditional proof W3C CCG standard. And what this is allowing, this standard, it allows DID documents and VCs to express and then prove smart signatures with multi-signatures and or one of N, M of N, weighted thresholds, delegated signatures. It allows you to show relationships between different verification methods. And then also it's recursive. It allows you to do combinations of the above. So just as a quick refresher, this is the, before I jump to that. Like I said, it supports these smart signature types as a general overview. What can you use this for? On a single device, you could use this to prove multi-factor authentication of a user. You could use this for a single DID to have multiple devices, each with different keys. This is also useful for multi-party signatures of VCs and documents, multiple pre-pull or pre-vein document. Or with, for example, the weighted threshold, you could have multiple people approving a new board member based on their weight by shares or by assets. You could do delegate authorization with this, so do a signature from a person that's been authorized from a company or a DAO. And you could do combinations of these. So you can have multiple people authorized on different from different companies, each doing a multi-signature on a VC or a document. So those are some of the possibilities of this. So this seems to be out of order. Anyway, this is the link. It's got a comprehensive summary of why we chose to use the DJWT library over the Digital Bazaar or the Transmute library. They were the three main decisions. I won't go into that. You can have a look at this if you want to. Maybe it's helpful for others to guide them. So a quick refresher on this spec. This is quite important. This is in the CCG library at the moment. We have got a PR there renaming this to conditional proofs. That's to reduce the confusion between the VC acronym, verifiable conditions, verifiable credential. A bit too confusing. We've renamed it conditional proof. So what this spec does, and I'm going to give you a quick example here. I'll hold on this for a moment. What this does, this is a verification method example. And this standard introduces a new verification type called conditional proof. And this allows you to express different conditions inside the DID document of the verification methods. So for example, this conditional proof and condition. And this and is an array of two items, right? One of them is a standard signature, an ED25519 signature. And the other, again, is another verification method that is, again, of this same type, conditional proof. So this shows you both the basic structure, a type, and then a particular property that tells you what kind of logic condition is. And then you can also have this recursively. So each of these objects that are in the array can again be either a standard signature type, which we know about, or a new one of these conditional proof types. And you can see then this goes on to have a condition or, and then two signatures here. So this condition verification method is satisfied when either of these two signatures are there, or, and a signature of this one as well. So there are multiple, basically condition types. It does logical and, logical or, threshold, weighted threshold. You have a condition, all of those are arrays of other verification methods. You have a condition delegator, which is a did URL string. You also have the ability to do express relationships between verification methods. We're not really using that for our implementation, but it's there. And then a property threshold, which is only valid if you're using these two properties here. So generally on these, you can only have one of these conditions and then possibly a threshold and then possibly also a relationship. That's all spec'd out in the specification. So just moving on, we created this spec. We were creating the AntelopeDid method, which supports multi-keeper account, but we did get some support and input from the community, and this is definitely useful for a number of DID methods that have the capacity for multi-keys per one DID. So I'll give it over to Rebel, who's going to explain a bit more about what we did to actually implement this in the DID JWT library.
Yes. Hello, everyone. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the technical architect, the difference we made in the DID JWT library. So normally a JSON web token has one signature, and that's, we can't use that for a multi-signature approach. So we had to find a way, and after research, we found out that a W3C standard offers a nested JWT standard. And how we do it is in a header, you have a CTY, and that's a content type. It says it's a JSON web token, and inside of the payload of it, there is the child JSON web token, and it has the properties. You can nest that to multiple levels, unlimited. Can we go to the next slide, Jack? Okay. So this is how the DID JWT library works. Before, it had a function called verify JWT. It expects a JSON web token. It decodes it and then resolve it using the resolve authenticator. That returns a DID document. The DID document has a signature and it gets verified using the function verify JSON web signature. And it searches for the algorithm. And there chooses one of them. If you see in the verify, for example, 256, and it chooses one, and then if it's true, if it's the right signature, it will return true. Now that doesn't work for a multi-signature, so we had to implement our own implementation from it. So as you can see on the right side, you have a verify JSON web token, and this this decodes a JSON web token, resolve it, and return a DID document. And from then, it checks the type. If it's a conditional proof, it goes to the verifiable conditional proof. If it's a signature, then it goes normally as the previous flow. Now, let's say, for example, the type conditional proof has a verification method of verifiable condition and, right? And this, it checks if the nested JSON web token, inside the verifiable condition, it checks if the inside of it a signature or a signature type or a condition proof type. And if it's a condition proof type, it's go back to the verifiable JSON web token and repeat that flow again and again until it verify all the nested JSON web token in it. And if it's only a signature type, then it goes back to the verifiable JSON web signature, as the previous flow does that. Any question about that?
Manu?
Or any questions about anything so far?
Yes, I have one. So first up, this is great. Like really, really cool. The whole concept of, you know, verifiable signatures and kind of cryptographic circuits and that sort of thing is great. And totally get the use cases. Those make a ton of sense as well. I'm wondering, is this formulated? And maybe I missed it earlier. I saw the verification method and how there are all the kind of conditional expressions there. The signature itself, I think, is what you're walking us through right now, Rebel. Is the expression a single signature, or is it like a modified JWT, or is it an array of signatures? What does the I see this, but is this mean, this means that you've basically, your signature is a JWT and then it nests other JWTs within the signature structure? Is that correct? What is a signature?
Yeah, that's correct. So it's we're using the JWT library. We want to stay JWT standard compliant. So the JWT now contains multiple signatures in it using the nested JWT feature of the standard. And as Rob explained, basically you put one JWT inside the payload of the next level JWT, and you have to set this property here to say this is a nested JWT. That's how the standard works.
Got it. Thanks.
Any other questions?
I can go on. That'll also give some time for people to think of things. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Christopher has a question. Christopher?
Yeah. One of my questions is, increasingly we're looking at scenarios that, where there is a mix of, MCP based thresholds, which you don't actually know that the thresholds are there. Do you have any way of marking, hey, you know, this is a single signature, but it is in fact, you know, a threshold 2 of 3 using, you know, ECDSA, MCP or anything, you know, do you deal with any of those types of issues?
Well, I'm not sure if this is going to answer it, but let me try. There's two parts of this. There's the DID document. So this is an example which contains the conditions that it needs to satisfy. And that contains the cryptographic conditions and the conditional conditions around those. So that's in the DID document. And the VC is where you contain the signatures and the proof. And the DID document that it resolves here, that's what it's checking that the signature against. Does this answer your question?
It's a little more subtle to that, but I'll maybe take it offline.
Sure. I also didn't understand the MPC. I don't know.
Yeah,
what
so
means.
Aggregatable, like Frost. There's also one now for ECDSA that Coinbase and other people are doing, where basically you're doing, you're doing signing operations, but at no point is there a single private key ever on any single machine. So it is a kind of multi-computational process. Frost is the one I like to use, but there's several of these.
I don't know about, maybe that could be expressed as a different key type here for the signature, but I don't think that this standard, the conditional proof, is really dealing with that part of signatures.
Okay. Just for your information,
from this initial introduction now.
Right. But just the result is exactly the same as a regular single signature, but in fact was created by multiple keys. So that's, it's more of a how does an organization know that that was done that way?
I don't think this is not, so this creates multiple signatures and by multiple keys is the way the condition logic works, and you verify against that. Unless one of these, like, that would have to be dealt with in another verification method type, if that would be the case, like Shores or whatever.
Sorry, I have a quick question. So earlier you mentioned this is a nested signature, and I'm wondering, can you actually check and verify one of the nested signatures, or you have to do it all, check and verify all signatures at once?
Yeah, so part of the library is we modified the decode JWT library. We added a new recurse optional parameter that is set to false by default. That makes it backwards compatible. So if you set this to true, it's actually going to go through and unnest all of these until it gets to the bottom level VC here and verify the signature each time we go through a proof here, whether it's AND or threshold or whatever. It goes and checks each of the items in the condition array here against each of those nested levels to check if the condition matches at each level. If it finds a condition matches at one level, it considers that item good, and then it'll move on to the next item in the array of conditions.
Got it. Thanks.
Does this answer your question? Yeah? Cool.
Yes. But then if that's the case, then the sequence of the signature is quite important, right? You cannot actually get to the bottom of the stack, basically. At first, basically, right?
There's no sequence requirements at this stage in this standard. So there's no, this will just check that, so for example, condition M will check that all of the verification method found in the array are matching at some level in this condition in the JWT.
Cool.
So it doesn't check they have to be in a certain order.
Got it. And by the way, I think, Phil, you're in the speaker queue.
Right. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Phil. So I had two questions. You just answered the second one, which is order is not being checked and doesn't matter in this particular instance. But the first question is just a practical question. Can you give any sense as to how much, additional, size is accrued when you start having 4, 5, 6 embedded signatures as part of the process? How much bloat are you adding to the credential?
Each new layer adds a little bit of metadata and a signature. So this is mostly what's getting added at each layer. And then there's also maybe some overhead for the base64 encoding each time. Because here, this part here, this is the base64 encoding. So this is the actual JWT here with 64 encoded of this. And then you add some additional metadata at each level. So these two parameters, the issuer, and a signature again. So effectively, if you took out the VC, you would expect this to double each, double for the first one, and then it'd be triple for the next level. The VC will obviously be a standard amount over the whole thing.
Right. Great. Thank you. That helps.
And Mani, you're in the queue. Like, I think you have a comment.
Yeah, there's effectively, you know, when you base64 encode something, my presumption here is you're doing base64 URL encoding. When you base64 encode something, you have 33% bloat over the standard binary size. And then as you embed those things inside one another, the bloat kind of goes up. So the more complex these signatures are, just purely because of the way JOTS work and Base64 encoding works, you're going to see, you know, a doubling, you know, and then a 33% overhead at every single nested level. I think we should clearly outline that, like, this is not a bad thing. Like, if you need conditional, signatures of this kind and you want them to, you know, provide like fairly complex scenarios, you are probably okay with the signature sizes getting, very large. Now, these approaches are mitigated with some of the techniques that Christopher was talking about, like their newer signature formats, that, you know, don't grow in size, like this. But again, I mean, that requires you to step away from, the JOT tooling, to take advantage of those things. And so it's really use case dependent. You know, I don't think people should look at this as like, you know, a terrible thing. It's just, you know, one of the costs of associating, of using these technologies, and fundamentally, it's probably not a big cost given kind of the value that you're getting out of the signature. That's it.
Thank you, Manu. Bob, I think you're in the queue.
Yeah, simple question. My apologies if it's dumb, but question is there anything inherent in the design that would prevent you from adding ordering conditions, like a condition after, say, that required reference to some other signatures having been provided.
Just off the, yeah, I get it. So you want to make a condition to say we need this order of conditions.
Right.
I think with this approach, you probably do that by adding a new condition type, subcondition type of the conditional proof that says we want this order, and that alongside one of these, we're going to say we want to make sure all of these are true and they're in this order. That would require, I think, an addition to the conditional proof type here. I think that'd make the most sense to me. Right now, it doesn't support this at a standards level. So,
okay. I just wanted to check if there was anything that would prevent it. Prevent one from, say, having a condition
prevent. I think you could, yeah. I don't, off the top of my head, I haven't thought about this till today. Rebel, can you think of any reason why we wouldn't be able to have a proof of the sequence of signatures?
No, I don't. I think it's even easy to implement with the way we built the library now.
Bonnie, do you have a comment?
Yeah, Bob, if your question is around, like, can you determine if the sequence of signatures happen in a certain way, there are other crypto suites that, you know, provide that. So, for example, like the data integrity stuff that's going through the verifiable credential working group right now has the concept of set signatures, like a set of signatures where you don't really care. It's just you want to make sure that there are like 5 signatures on this verifiable credential for whatever reason. So set signatures, you know, are supported just with base data integrity stuff, and then chained signatures. So you have a chain of signatures or a series of signatures that have to follow a specific order. That's a part of just kind of the base layer data integrity mechanism as well. So there could be ways of combining like what we're looking at here with those other more lower level primitives that are available in, you know, the data integrity stuff, to get to what you're, you know, asking about. And those things are going to be through, you know, the standards process. There are, global standards track, features at this point.
All right. We'll take one more question and we'll let, Jack and, Ripple, move on with the rest of the presentation. But Christopher, you have the floor.
Thank you. Yeah, I think one of the things that we discovered when we were working on some similar stuff. I put a link into the chat for a document on how to design multi-sig thresholds and quorums and things of that nature. And is that then to be able to do the this kind of next operation, then you need to be able to have smart signature operations that can refer to smart signatures in a prior object, because these things are, you know, when you're talking about this particular structure is great for evaluating this, you know, these things that were all kind of signed at the same time of the same data. But when you're trying to verify, use a signature to verify that another signature was valid, you have this sort of, layer problem because you're basically having to create code that then looks at another signature rather than looking at the payload. So it's a lot harder to do those. And I also am a little concerned. I mean, we ended up we found a way of doing it with threshold signatures instead. So we ended up not, doing that particular function because we had some questions about its security. But it's hard creating thresholds and quorums and all that kind of stuff in ways that address all the needs. That's it.
Thanks, Christopher.
Cool. I might just go on. I'm sure there's more things we can discuss after that. Is that okay, Harrison?
Yes, please. Thank you.
So this was just a bit of a summary of how we're viewing this implementation. So this is obviously in the DigAVT library. We made it DID, VC, and JWT standards compliant. We think that the same approach can be used inside JDproofs as well because there is a support for JWSs inside the JSON-LD. Though, of course, it would be better to have this, fully supported in the way JSON-LD expresses signatures. As a framework, I'm going to refer to how Christopher, who we're lucky to have here today, there's a video he did on smart signatures, and I'm just going to walk through how we see this implementation in that framework. So the first characteristics of smart signatures, we think this solution is fairly composable because you can have one conditional proof inside another. It obviously can't do like complex logic other than logic gates and weighted thresholds, but it can recursively go through these conditions. It's fairly inspectable. Like you saw, you can see the conditions needed here. It's verbose. It's JSON. It's as far as we can tell provable, though I don't have, a real background in doing theoretical proofs of proofs, but in essence, because it's deterministic, because the signatures are set, because at any one time you should be able to go back and say, okay, this signature was valid, you should be able to make proofs about the proofs. It's deterministic, so you will create the same signature every time, and you should be able to validate it every time. The only thing I'm not sure about here is because there's no history solution in the DID method yet, that would have to be implemented to be able to go back in time and check a DID document that has rotating keys. Other than that, I think the proof should be deterministic. It is right now unbounded in the theory, but it can be bounded in the implementation. You would just have to limit the amount of recursive layers you went through. Set some limit there, whether it's a number or a time. And it's somewhat efficient. We haven't actually done a measure of the signature time or the proving time yet. That would actually be a good thing to do. Maybe I should add that to the next slide. I'll go to the next slide. I'm sure maybe Christopher has some comments here, but we can definitely go back to those, Christopher. So what we see is next. So this is basically developed. the main place we did this work as part of a grant for the Antelope Network Foundation. And as such, we developed this thing called the Antelope SSI toolkit to do this work. We developed this test library, which is not in these libraries at the moment. This just seemed a bit easier at the time. So you can run this test suite. This does go over multiple cases of issuing with multiple signatures, delegations, combinations of those. You can run that here in this test suite. It's got the instructions for how to run it. We have got these three PRs. They're on our repositories, but basically, this just shows the changes made to the upstream fork branch. So you can easily see what have we changed. So for example, we did three changes, on the resolver. We just changed the verification method type. It's very simple. So we just added this to the typing. On the DWT VC library, the main thing is we've added some logic to be able to create a multi-signature verifiable credential JWT with multiple issuers. And then the changes to the DJWT is the big ones. That's the one that Rebel explained the architecture chain for. So what we see is happening next is we'd like to start seeing some action with us here. We do want to merge. So we'd like to kind of first see the comments here and check this is all okay. Then if that makes sense, basically move these unit tests into the DJWT library. We have a question here though. These unit tests are depending on the Antelope, which is the only implementation which creates a DID document with this conditional proof type. So right now these depend on a specific DID and if we were to move these into the DJWT library, how would we show this conditional proof? Would it be appropriate to use that Antelope DID method there? We want to move this to the upstream diff repos. We have an idea to add a function to the VC library to basically add signatures asynchronously. That's about it for this main work that we've done. Also, as I mentioned, conditional proof, we've got a PR to change the name. This has been now reviewed and approved by three people, but it hasn't been merged yet, so we'd like to see this merged. And lastly, we'd like to see this standard conditional proof adopted in JSONLD, VC libraries, and DIDCOM. So that's it from Rebel and me. Thanks for your time, and any other questions or comments?
Thanks, Jack. Thanks, Rebel. Ori, I think you have a comment on the earlier Jack's question.
I have now posted a link in the chat to slides. Sorry, a link cool. To these slides, yeah.
Keith, you're in the queue. Yeah.
Thanks for this. It looks really amazing. I think the challenge I've had with these types of schemes, threshold signatures and multi-sig, is not so much in the implementation at the cryptographic layer, but in the human implementation, like how you organize, like collecting wallets from multiple signatures, or even like presenting to a signatory, like what it is they're signing. Maybe this is probably not your scope of work, but I wondered if you had any thoughts about this, about how you kind of implement this in real life products.
How we present this to the user.
How you collect, like if you need like three signatures, how you organize wallets to go collect them.
I think it's really going to depend on the use case, of course. So for example, for a multi authentication case, the user's in the same wallet. This is probably the easiest user experience wise. You just have to present them with multiple challenges. Each challenge guards a different key, which proves you to the multi-factor. When you start doing the multi-party, I guess proposal, vote, or proposal and sign kind of. Um, something like this, you'd have to orchestrate moving VCs or whatever around between their devices. That's not part of this work.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah, I think that to me has been the challenge in this and how that part of it is implemented. But yeah, thank you.
All right, Christopher, you're next in queue. Christopher, do you have any comments or questions?
Yes, I just put into the chat the, again, that multi-sig scenario design thing. Yes, to answer the previous question a little, there is a lot of design that is required in how to assemble and, for instance, you'll run into situations that are not reflected in the conditions, but where somebody wants to be the last signer. But the fact that they're the last signer is not relevant to verification. It's relevant only in the process of signing all the others in some kind of partial form along the way. So you might have, Joe and Ken are the primary signers, and the COO only signs after the first two primary signers have signed, so that there's a quorum. So there's some things that can happen in the process of signing, some processes there that really don't need to be reflected in the final conditions, because the final condition says, hey, if there's three of the five people, it's valid, or two of three or whatever it happens to be. So, there is a lot of, variance there. I happen to be a big fan of, nested thresholds. Two of threes is effectively a four of nine, but, it can have a lot of additional properties, in the sense of, emergency signers. This is often important, say, with, a verifiable credential by an institution where, you really want to have a distributed signing, kind of scenario where, if New York is down, or is on on vacation or whatever, business processes can still proceed. If you're interested in talking more about these types of things, this is a topic that Blockchain Commons has been doing research on, and we'd be glad to, to do more. Thanks.
Thanks, Christopher.
Thank you.
And Bob, I think you're next in queue.
All right. Yeah, I'm just curious. I know the focus here is on the technology, but have you all given much thought to how a user interface might present an incomplete signature to a user, to an end user, not a programmer?
So we're currently building a wallet ourselves, it's called Autonomy ID, and one of the features we're putting into it is something called single sign-on. So it's going to look like Google single sign-on. And the difference we're having, which is using this library, the conditional proof library and all of this, is that instead of having one key in the wallet that does everything, we basically provision keys for each web application that you log into, whether it's a web app or another mobile app or wherever. It gives a key to that application, which controls its own interface, and it basically controls the user interface for signing VCs, whether it wants to present any of the meta details about a VC to the user or not is really up to that and then. And it's our kind of vision that by being able to cryptographically associate a VC with the user without actually having to go to the wallet every time gives the usability flexibility that we see to be able to use VCs properly. There is, of course, a case where you want something to go back to the high security wallet. That's going to be Autonomy ID. And for that part, to actually present a user with a generic purpose VC, I'm not exactly sure yet how we're going to do that in a really user-friendly way. Seems challenging.
Cool. Any other questions? All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Rabal. Thank you for, actually, Christopher, do you have a question?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's more of a trying to respond to the last one. The user side of this for the, you know, for signing things is a lot harder, than a lot of people think, because you end up having to express a signing policy in ways, that are, you know, complex. So for instance, you know, Joe, you know, is the, initiator of a, you know, again, this, you know, pre-signing kind of phase of the policy. And he needs to explain why, you know, other parties might need to sign it, or why, you're taking advantage of an emergency signer, or, you know, why an emergency signer is required. And there's a flow of things. Sometimes people want to be the last signer. They don't want to be the first signer. Et cetera. So it turns out it is a hard problem. There have been some good lessons in, Bitcoin's partially signed, Bitcoin transactions, from the very first version of it, which had really no metadata, to, you know, later versions that allows for more metadata to be put into it. So there's some lessons there. I imagine other, cryptocurrency work on multi-signatures, may also, you know, give you some UI tips there. But, you know, my biggest thing is that the pre-signing thing is actually a lot harder UX-wise than you might think it is. That's it.
Thank you, Christopher. Keith, you have the floor.
Yeah, I just want to follow in from that comment. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think if you have like a backend, let's say like a Workday that already has those kind of orchestration features available as part of their bread and butter, then it's fairly like, a system like, you know, like a big HR system can do that. But it's like, how do you do it in a decentralized way? I would suggest like we maybe need like new parameters, which basically like the purpose that you're asking someone to sign, or things like that, that would have to be populated. So it's just to echo, it's a really tough problem in the decentralized world. And I think it almost leads us always back to having to build an orchestration engine.
Cool. I have a question for Christopher. So what's the trade-off between the complexity, flexibility of the business logic versus like performance, payload, and things like that? Like, for example, earlier you mentioned about threshold signatures. I think it sounds cool, but how much complexity, like payload and performance trade-offs are there?
Well, for this particular, approach to it, the conditionals, which I'm a big fan of just because of its simplicity, the objects get bigger, and it can be kind of painful in that regards, but I don't think from a computational perspective that it's particularly challenging. Some of the other threshold technologies and stuff are, sometimes don't run on, small devices, in particular small signing devices. So for instance, we had a whole conversation last week at the Silicon Salon that we host on how to accelerate, some of those types of operations on, new emerging chips. So, there's some issues with some of the more advanced cryptographic operations. But one of the things, another kind of point I really want to emphasize with people is that, this in almost all of the language around this, we are talking about people signing. My gut feel is these things types of things are going to be deployed. You're going to have people who sign things. You're going to have, specific devices that sign things that, you know, have their own policies for how they sign it. So one person may be actually represented by a quorum, you know, it's like, it's his ring, it's his phone, and it's, you know, his company cloud service. And those are the three, you know, three signatures. But it's one person. I also think that you might have signatures where, you know, this is not valid unless the accounting server says the budget is available, has been approved for it. And you don't put in the budget and what the budget numbers are and all that kind of stuff into the conditional. You just simply say, hey, you know, it requires some quorum of accounting servers to say, yes, it meets the budget and they can't sign by themselves because there's a different threshold that is the personal approval. All they're doing with their threshold is dealing with the, yes, it has met, you know, certain kinds of non, you know, human conditions. So there's a richness there that I think is going to emerge.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you, Christopher. We have two more minutes, so we'll take two last comments or questions, and then if people have to drop, just want to give a quick note for next Tuesday. We'll have Kalia to talk about the CA California Vital Records. All right, Bob, you're next.
Yeah, I just wanted to support what I think it was Keith had said about purpose. The reason I asked the question about presentation was it seems to me that as these conditions become more and more complex, because we can get into arbitrarily complex Booleans here, it'll be important to have some way to carry along some non-machine data that explains to people why their signatures may be required at particular points and why they're, you know, why the structure is the way it is. And I just think it's important that we remember that in order to present this stuff to people, we are going to have to explain to them, have something other than the raw signature code to explain to them what they need to do and why they need to do it.
Cool. Thanks. And Jack, I think you can close today's discussion and presentation. Thanks.
Yeah, super. I had one comment. I just wanted to add again my opinion here about this whole user experience topic, which is very relevant and difficult. So I honestly am not convinced that it's possible to create a single signature, let alone a multi-signature wallet that's generic, that you can present to mainstream users and get them to understand what's going on for generic VCs. So I think it's really only possible to have mainstream level VCs used when you control the user experience at a use case specific level. So that's just how I'm thinking about user experience. And this library here is obviously not at that level. This is to be consumed by applications or consumer applications or libraries that then get consumed again, and that they control the user experience around getting VCs signed. The user may or may not even know that they're signing VCs. Just want to add that opinion out there. This is an approach we're taking into the autonomy application suite, all open source design. And you're welcome to reach out to us about that if you want. I had a question now. What would be the next stages to get both the conditional proof merges fixed as well as get people to interact with us here and to start getting this moving towards the diff repos? Do you see this as a good path? And are there any other steps we need to take?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, in regards to getting more people involved, like if you could send me the links, then I can, or you can just reply back to the agenda that I sent out, or I can send send it for you to the CCG mailing list. In regards to the question about how to represent conditional proof DID method, I think Ori earlier made a comment that you might not need to create a new method. You can just use the web DID method. And then lastly, in regards to update the name and merge the pull request, I can talk to Mike. Unfortunately, he cannot make it today. I can talk to Mike and then maybe Manu, and then we can, if there's no objections, I don't think so. If there's no objections, we can actually just do it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Would you see it as necessary to get like these unit tests into the DJWT library? Does this make sense?
Actually, I think Bumble Fudge, I think you have a comment to make.
I was just going to say, I don't know. I think those are dormant work items at diff. So I'm not even sure who you'd talk to about merging them in. I think I'm not sure if any companies are currently going to bump those to V2 when the VC working group, has a stable V2 draft of VCJWT. And I think they will need to. I think those, diff repos might be very V1 or V1.1. So, Ori says he's happy to help. I would say that, you know, it's would be good to combine with a general refresh of those libraries if anyone wants to do that. was my only suggestion.
So just so I understand, are you suggesting these libraries are soon to become outdated, and therefore the V, you know, this is currently at version 6.1. This library, this is the major change we have, that this doesn't need to be integrated. Quite understanding.
Oh, I just meant that if you're Ori's saying in the chat that these libraries are for V1.1 of the VC, and the JWT expression or proofing mechanism is changing a lot in V2 of the VC. So, if you wanted
the main changes we make, are not to the VC library. It's the main one is just to this library. So I'm wondering if this is changing significantly, or just the VC spec.
So the VC spec itself is changing. So if did JWT and did JWT VC wanted to support or migrate to or have a future version that supports V2 JWT VCs, it would be a big undertaking, and that might be a good time to include this multi-sig stuff. It might you know, be a cooperative thing if
to
you
include
want
it in the VC spec.
Sorry, yeah. What? Oh, sorry. I meant for those libraries. I mean, I'm saying that if you wanted some, you know, like a dialogue and cooperation with a company with any organization or group of people, bumping those specs to the newer, to have the interoperability with V2 conformant JWT systems, it would be a good opportunity to also sneak in this multi-sig stuff support, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
There's sort of like, I'm phrasing it kind of circumspectly, but what I'm saying is, I don't know who is actively working on those libraries, so I don't think anyone will say no if you put in a non-breaking change that lets additional signature types work. But if what you're looking for is more cooperation or checking each other's work, then it might you might have to wait till someone bumps that library to V2. Or just
I see what you're saying. Because
or just message Mirsha directly.
Yeah.
Is Diff going to be doing SDJOT? Because that also has huge implications with all of this.
SDJOT?
The selective disclosure JOT version. Because basically you have now this problem where, you know, for various information is being selectively disclosed. Thus, you know, the signers may need access to information that is not available in the actual final verifiable credential, which makes the multi-sig complicated. I mean, we ran into this with Gordian envelopes where, you know, we give very clear warnings that, you know, information has been elided that you're signing. And so maybe you don't want to sign it. But there are cases where you need to sign stuff that is, you know, that is elided for specific use cases. So again, it's, you know, if there's one thing you guys learned from all of this is that there is a whole different pre-flighting before signing, you know, policy process thing that mm-hmm. you need to be able to articulate better. And, mm-hmm. you know, some of these technologies cause, we need to articulate the requirements for the policies, which is very separate from, okay, you know, here's this final conditional signature that reflects after all the policies have been implemented that, you know, that you should continue, that you can rely on them. That's it.
So to answer your question on whether that's a work item at DIFF, I haven't heard anyone at DIFF working on it. I know that the SD JWT work and the not JWP work, the JSON Web Proofs work, which was originally incubated at DIFF, they've both been accepted to working groups. Ori said in the chat that the OAuth working group at ITF is working on SDJWT, so I think that might be sort of upstream. I can't see DIFF would necessarily... I can't imagine DIFF organizations wanting to incorporate that in that general purpose sort of public option library if they're a moving target, and you know, I think DIFF folks would probably wait until ITF has a version of it to implement the library, and even then, it would probably get implemented by one company and donated rather than co-developed in DIFF.
I mean, as I understand it, SDJOT is based on mobile driver's licenses selective disclosure, so it's an important competitive feature.
Yeah. it might happen, but I haven't heard of anyone doing it at DIFF or donating it to DIFF. It may well be DIFF companies that go to market with that, but I don't know.
Jack, does that answer your question? I think we might have lost Jack. Jack?
Sorry, my internet seems to be cutting out a little bit. Did you ask me something?
Yes, does that answer your question earlier?
It sounds like maybe I need to make a work item at DIFF or contact, what's his name? Mike Rains. Sounds like a good next step. Could be good to get anybody else's opinions on this. It does sound, to me, it seems more likely that this change doesn't affect the VC version 2, because this is about how we, JW2s are handled. So unless that's changing in the VC spec, I can't imagine that there's a big change in the way JWTs are verified. That's just a hunch, though.
Okay.
I've got to go, though.
Yep.
Thanks, everyone, for your time.
Yeah, if you need any help to connect people from different communities, just let me know.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, we will.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you all.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Bye.